All right, so welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is Captain Barry, and we've got Robert and Alexandra be fishing with us today, once again. And today the species we're going to talk about is catching the largest bonnethead shark you can imagine. But
that's a relative term.
I know.
You know, but, you know, it's the smallest of the species of hammerhead.
It is. And how big would you say is, like, the largest that they get, like, maximum? It's, like, 4.5 feet-ish?
Maybe.
If that.
I mean, I think the world record's, like, 33 pounds or something.
Yeah. So that's not that big of a quote-unquote shark. But yeah, so.
You know, but, you know, in our area, Charlotte Harbor, Southwest Florida, I'd say the biggest one I've seen is probably about 25 pounds.
Really? One that big?
Yeah.
I'm going to be...
It was quite a long time ago.
I'm going to be honest, the biggest shark bonnethead shark I've caught in the harbor was probably only like 3.5 feet, which is, I don't know, what?
Mid-teens.
Yeah, I would say 10, 12 pounds, that's it. But where did someone catch one that big in this area?
Turtle Bay.
Wow. That's huge. That must have looked like a...
I thought it was a little baby hammerhead at first.
Oh, my gosh. That's huge.
But they actually put it on a boga grip. Yeah. They released it, but they put it on a boga grip.
And waited.
Yep.
Wow. Wow.
But, you know, the bonnethead shark, you know, it's way underrated. It's, you know, the some of the locals call them shovel-nosed sharks because it's more manly than bonnethead. And honestly, their head does resemble more of a shovel than it does a bonnet to me.
Exactly, it does.
You know, a hammerhead is flat across the face, just forms basically a perfect T.
Exactly.
Versus a bonnethead shark is actually more rounded across the nose, and then the eyeballs come out and then make the T on the backside. So
exactly.
It does look more like a shovel than it does a bonnet to me.
Yeah.
But they're small species. You know, they, you know, like we said, you know, 3 feet, 3.5 feet is about average here. But I think the coolest part about it is, as far as a shark species goes, is that A, it's a wonderful starter shark.
Very true.
For anyone, whether you're a man, woman, or child going out to experience their first shark. If you're visiting from up north, especially if you take children out, that 3-foot shark is now 10 feet by the time they get back to school to tell about fishing with grandma or grandpa in Florida and catching their first shark.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah.
Learning how to handle a shark properly, it's an awesome species for that.
Right.
But I think the really ultimate coolest part is you don't need giant tackle for them. Or a giant boat to go do it in.
Right. And I was going to say, Robert, I find them primarily, like, when you're on the flats, on, like, 2-3 feet of water along, like, the grass flats, that's where I see the majority of come across these bonnet heads. They'll just be cruising in and out, like, from the bar all the way to the mangrove shoreline.
Yeah.
You'll see them cruising all in that area. There's not, like, they're always moving and cruising. They're not going to be sitting, as no shark does, really.
Right. Only a couple do, but not very often.
Right. So is that the best place to find your bonnet heads in our estuaries?
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely will inhabit the flats and the shallower waters. Like 4 feet of water or less is very common throughout the whole winter time.
Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, they do a little bit of a disappearing act. And it's not because our visibility in the water isn't there. It's just... they move to other areas. They like to move out sometimes in more open water, or they do a little bit of migration that I'm not familiar with at all. But that's what makes them so cool, is because during the wintertime, you go out there on those flats and you can sight fish for them. And that's how you could potentially target the largest one.
Right. And Alex, have you caught a bonnethead yet?
I haven't. I've actually been sitting over here wanting to Google it because I don't know what it looks like.
You haven't seen one in person yet on the flats or anything like that?
No, I have not.
Ooh, this is going to be a fish to put on your resume here soon.
Oh, yeah. There are still a lot that need to go on my resume.
They're pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think you'll really like them. They're a lot of fun.
Edible?
Yes.
Everything's edible, but palatable?
Yes. bonnet heads are like very well known as them and black tip sharks in our area are the two top, I would say, sharks to eat that people okay. really rave about. Wouldn't you say the same, Robert?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're right up there with a black tip. And the other great part is that, you know, South or Florida has, in particular Southwest Florida, has four species of sharks that don't have a size limit on them. And the bonnet head falls in that category. So, you know, it's a very edible fish, and it doesn't have to be a large fish in order to keep or maintain.
Definitely. Definitely. So,
you know, what tackle would you use for catching them?
Me, personally, since these bonnet heads, you're going to catch them in open water scenarios, you're not going to need, like, really heavy gear to pull them away from structure so you can, like, enjoy the fight more. I would say anywhere from 10 to 20-pound braid is my main line I would be using.
Wow.
You don't need anything crazy, to be honest.
So you said in open water. Does that mean I can't catch them from shore?
No, you can. It's just when I say open water, like when you're on the grass flats, mm-hmm. you're not. When you hook them, you're typically not going to be in any sort of structure that's going to cut you off or be in a compromising position. So that's what I mean by that, open water.
Yeah, you'll catch them from shore, you know, usually closer proximity to flats, though. Like, some of the piers are not very common to catch them.
Right.
But if you are in a specific area that you are closer to flats, you will find them.
Right.
But they are all over the place mm-hmm. on the flats. And, you know, it's primarily due to their food source.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a shark, which, what do most sharks eat?
Everything. Little children.
Annoying ones, yeah, absolutely. But
mullet?
Yeah, sharks mostly in our area feed on fish of some kind. But bonnethead sharks, primarily, their first most sought after first choice of food
is a crustacean, like
shrimp.
A shrimp or a crab, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Shrimp or a crab. Yep. Which makes them a little bit of a unique shark. And it also makes it easier for us to target because you can go out there and just use something as simple as shrimp or small blue crabs
right.
on them.
And I was going to say because they eat shrimp, it makes it the shark that people catch the most, I would feel, because a lot of people, that's the most basic bait to use out here in saltwater, shrimp. And even people fishing at the Boca Grande Pier or these Placida Piers will throw shrimp in the water and catch these bonnet heads. And it's like, if they've never caught a shark before, that's huge to them because catching a shark just has like a very meaningful experience, especially to people who are just getting into fishing. So that's something cool about the bonnet head. It's usually a lot of people's first shark.
Right. Exactly. You know, and basically to go out and target them, to target your largest one, honestly, you're going to be sight fishing for that animal.
Right.
The ideal way would be to go to a flat somewhere, like whether it's the west wall, the east wall, mm-hmm. Bull Bay, Turtle Bay,
mm-hmm.
and either drift across those flats in that 2 to 4 feet of water range where you can see well enough, or use your trolling motor and just slowly trolling motor along, and you're going to find little pockets because mm-hmm. they're almost kind of social animals in a way, because usually when you see one, you'll see several in that area.
Very true. Yeah, they're not going to be together, but when you, like you said, when you come across one, you're probably going to go 20, 30 yards and find another one, and they're just in a little, they're working a little area.
Yeah, they seem to almost work together, but not
isolated enough that you don't think, they're not in like a pack together.
Yeah. But it's not uncommon over a course of 100 yards to run into 10 to 20 of them. And then go another mile and never see another one, and then bump into another little area of them again.
Yeah.
So while you're doing that drifting out there, you would be trying to isolate that biggest one or what you perceive to be the largest one.
Yeah.
And, you know, the greatest part about them being small and the small baits that we're going to use, you know, you're using smaller, lighter tackle.
Yes.
You know, which, you know, what would you guys think would be the appropriate tackle, or what would you use for the appropriate tackle for them?
For me, I know when you think sharks, you think of wire leader. I personally have caught majority of my bonnet heads targeting other species, and I've done it with fluorocarbon or monofilament just fine. So, and I'm usually using a circle hook. So I would stay away from wiring, and I typically would use 30-pound is fine with a circle hook as long as he doesn't, you know, suck it down too deep. But if I was specifically targeting these bonnet heads, I would jump up to at least 50-pound mono or fluorocarbon leader and use about a, you know, matching the size of the bait, but a hook up to a circle hook in line up to a 3-0. And me personally, because the biggest bonnet head I've ever caught was on blue crab, and I know they love crustaceans, I would use a piece of blue crab, cut it in half, kind of like a black, for like you're fishing for black drum, and let that soak on the bottom wherever you know that they're, you know, they're cruising. Because I feel like crabs are have a lot of scent to give, and those bonnet heads will find it very quickly.
Real quickly, because they are in the hammerhead family, which have some of the best smell sensories of all the sharks in the world. They're unbelievably good at detecting stuff.
Yes.
So I would agree with that. The only thing I would do differently is, you know, I'm using a 7-foot rod, bass tackle or snooker redfish tackle with 15 or 20 pound braid or 10 or 12 pound test mono, something that I can cast a little ways. But I am going to go to, like, say, 30 pound fluorocarbon leader.
Okay.
But in addition to that, I am actually going to use a small piece of steel tied to the end of that. I'm going to use the, like, American Fishing Wire makes this really great knotable wire.
Yes.
So you don't need crimps. You don't need any fancy tools. You can just tie an overhand clinch knot, and it holds. I'm going to attach about a 6 to 12-inch piece of that to the end of my 30-pound monofilament or fluorocarbon leader, and then my circle hook. And the only reason why I'm going to do that is because, A, we're targeting the largest of the bonnet heads.
Good point.
So there's a potential for him to bite through, because they do have teeth. Contrary to what people think, oh, it's a little tiny shark, he doesn't have teeth. Yes, they do. They can cause stitches in a heartbeat if they bite you in the right spot. If they get you just right, they could potentially take a fingertip.
Yes, yes.
You know, I've never really witnessed it, but with the teeth they've got in them, you're going to lose blood if you're not careful. So they can bite through that mono leader. But that knotable stuff, it just comes in a very small diameter, so it's a little less visible. You know, hopefully it's not going to spook the shark away, because they can pick up on that electromagnetic field that the metal is going to be putting off. But the main reason why I want that fluorocarbon in between is for two purposes. Is one, I'm using braided line, so I want a shock absorber between the steel and the braid line, since neither one of them have a stretch. But the most important part is I want a handle to grab a hold of when I get that fish boat side.
Very good point. You do not want to be grabbing the braid or wire when you're dealing with a shark. You want to have something that you can grip, and that's going to be your fluorocarbon, your monofilament here in this case, when you get them close to the boat, correct?
Right, and especially since a lot of people, it might be their first shark, you don't really necessarily have the experience, and you never, ever, ever, under no circumstances, grab a shark by its tail to lift it into the boat.
No, that's like that's a huge mistake.
That's how most people get bit, because a shark can turn around and bite its own tail.
Yeah, especially a lemon shark. That's scary.
Yeah, lemons and bonnet heads, honestly, are probably the two most limber of both of all the sharks that I've dealt with.
Yeah.
But, you know, and a 9-foot lemon swing right around and bite his tail.
Yeah, you think you've got distance from his tail to his head when you're grabbing like a 10-foot lemon. I've done it for Chandler on the beach, and I grab his tail, and like that thing swung all the way back with its head, and just I let go immediately, but he could have easily grabbed my hand. But that's another story.
That was the whole story. That was pretty
good. Actually, that was it. And I was like, there was more to that story. No, there wasn't. I totally almost got bit.
But bonnet heads, you know, can do the same thing. So you never grab them by their tail. So, you know, you grab that leader, and then in order to get them off the hook, if you're planning on not keeping them, honestly, just keep them hanging over in the water. Let them calm down, because they're going to thrash around and do donuts. You know, take either a good long pair of needle nose pliers, or there's a couple of good de-hooking devices, slide it down and pop that hook out, or cut the leader off and let them swim away, staying in the water.
Right. Yep.
If you want a photograph, that's fine and understandable. If you're planning on keeping the shark to harvest it to eat it, which is understandable too, and I don't have any problems with that. But you bring the shark into the boat, you need to clear the deck of everything. Feet, tackle boxes, everything.
Or have your cooler open immediately if you're going to harvest them or you're alive
right.
or whatever.
Well, let's say you're going to take a picture.
Okay.
So clear an area, because when you bring them into the boat, they're going to go ballistic for a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and you need to be very careful at that moment. So once they've calmed down for that second or two, and let's say you want to get a photograph of them, at that point, you have the shark with his belly laying down flat on the deck. You reach down and grab him firmly, but not brutally, behind the head, just in front of the gills.
Good. That's very good advice. Between your thumb and your index finger, like that, just grab him just like that.
Yeah, almost like a good Spock grip, but yeah. Do not grab the gills, because that can damage them, and even though they swim away, you could have really damaged them.
Yes.
Grab that, have good, complete control of that shark, and then hold the tail, but always face the shark out towards the open water.
Mm-hmm.
And then have the person pose with it. But if that shark starts to flip or freak out, they automatically let go with both hands out of the boat, so the fish can go into the water rather than back into the boat, where it could potentially hurt somebody or itself.
That's really good advice, because dropping a shark like that 2-3 foot onto the bottom of the boat is no good for
your feet. It's not good for the shark or your feet, because a lot of people are either barefooted or wearing sandals on a boat, and you don't want that. You don't want to get hurt. You know, we don't want to hurt the animal, but if you do decide to keep that shark, let's go over that for a second, because, I mean, it's really super important, because there's nothing wrong with eating them, because they're great, but taking care of that shark beforehand makes all the difference in the world.
Before we talk about how to take care of the shark, if you did plan on harvesting it, I don't know if I missed it, but what is my favorite bait to use for bonnethead is a piece of blue crab. What's yours, your go-to?
I'm probably going to use a shrimp.
Okay.
But I do really enjoy a crab, too. I mean, I think when bonnethead fishing, I usually carry both.
Yeah.
You know, but a shrimp is usually more readily available, because they'll eat a frozen shrimp or a live shrimp, and blue crabs are not always as easily accessible all the time. But
very true.
Frozen shrimp or live shrimp usually are.
And right. Bait on bottom.
Not necessarily. There's a lot of times I'll actually put it under a bobber, too, because I'm fishing very shallow water, and sometimes they're over some fairly thick grass.
Yeah.
And I want to be able to monitor it, because sometimes if there's two or three in that area, I want to be able to say, okay, that's the smaller one, but where's my bait at? And I have a harder time finding it if it's sitting down in some of that grass. So if I've got a bobber, it gives me a little bit better perspective on where that fish or bait is at in relation to the fish that I'm trying to target.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I use bobbers quite a bit. You know, people laugh at it sometimes, but when they see it done, they go, that actually kind of makes sense.
Yeah, because I think bobbers get a bad rap, where people think that it's like
reminds you of your childhood.
A childhood, or it's like a crutch. Right, it's a crutch you're using to like catch fish. But
that's why they all laugh at me when I tell them to use a bobber for tarpon fishing.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same concept.
Yeah,
it's a crutch, and yes, you're a child. Here's your Snoopy pole to go along with your bobber, mm-hmm. But guess what? Bobbers work exceptionally well for a lot of different things.
It's very effective. I agree. So how would you prepare these sharks if you're just plan on harvesting a bonnethead?
Well, number one, you need to make sure, you know, all fish in Florida have to be landed in whole condition.
Okay.
By law.
Mm-hmm.
But with the exception of sharks, they actually allow you to gut that shark, because that species doesn't have a size limit on it, so you don't have to worry about it being too short or too long if it's a slot limit. But you want to have a cooler that's long enough to handle that fish and plenty of ice.
Yeah.
But what you want to do immediately, as soon as you feel comfortable, preferably while the animal is still alive, gut him. Take him from, you know, his throat down to his anal opening and remove all of the internal parts of that shark.
Okay.
And then, once you've done that, then you actually take him and put him in the cooler, fill up his open cavity with some ice, and then put him on the ice chest itself.
So am I understanding this correctly? Landed is not getting the fish into the boat. Landed is getting the fish into the boat and back to shore?
Back correct. To shore, yes.
Ah.
Yeah, so once you get him in the boat, that's still not landed. And once you get back onto shore, whether it's at the boat ramp or behind your house, at that point you can technically start cleaning your fish. But while coming back, the man, if he were to stop you and check your bag limit or the types of fish that you've got, he needs to be able to identify that it's the right species and that it's of legal length.
Ah, interesting.
So if you're caught filleting fish out on the water, it can be a pretty serious problem. Because you've got to argue with him at that point that that white fillet is out of a trout and not a snook that might be out of season or undersized or oversized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just not worth it.
Yeah. No.
So just land it, bring it back to land in whole condition, well, without the guts or the inside. I like how you put it.
Yeah, because sharks actually urinate two ways. One, they urinate through their anal opening, but they also release some that's similar to urine through their skin, urea, and it's basically still ammonia, and it's leaching out through their skin pores. Their body weight is what? 10% or 20% is their liver weight?
I think it's high. I believe it's might even be more than 20, but don't quote me on that. But I know
it's up there.
I was thinking 40, like, honestly.
It's their largest organ in their body. Yeah. I mean, body weight-wise,
open a shark, like a six-foot shark, you're like, what in the world is this huge thing in there? And it's their liver, like you said.
It's giant.
Yeah.
You know, a bonnet head that's 3 feet long is going to have a liver in it that's anywhere between 12 and 14 inches long.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's pretty darn big.
Yeah.
So livers remove toxins from every living animal's body. If you leave that in there, when that animal dies, those toxins start to leach out of that liver and absorb right into the meat because the meat is more porous. So you're getting those toxins, but also you're getting that urea will actually absorb into the skin from their body organs too. So people who say that sharks taste horrible and they tasted really strong of ammonia or something like that, it was because one, they didn't gut the animal right away, preferably while it's still alive, and B, they just didn't care for it properly by putting it on ice and everything else after doing all of that. So that's a super important part of it, because it's senseless to kill any animal and waste it because you didn't care for it properly.
Right. I agree.
You know, so that's kind of like, and sharks are such great eating, but so many people just don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of definitely pretty important to go with.
Definitely. I agree. Do you feel like you've learned enough, Alex, to go and catch your first bonnethead at this point?
I do. Do you have any recipes you recommend?
Oh, geez. Honestly, just a lot of people just cook them right on the grill, but remove the skin is the best thing.
Oh, you definitely.
Can steak them and remove the skin, because the skin still has a little bit of that urea in it.
Okay.
And it'll tone it down immensely. You can also soak it in a little bit of buttermilk overnight or for a couple hours, and that'll help draw out a little bit of that ammonia too.
Okay.
And then cook them however you want, because it's a super firm, firm meat, so you can treat it just like a regular beef steak.
And it's got the texture of the chicken when you eat it. So it's not even going to taste fishy or feel like something that came from the ocean, believe it or not.
Yeah, season it and cook it how you would like.
Yeah, it's probably one of the better tasting sharks because of its diet of shrimp and
definitely.
Very true. Well, that's going to... Didn't mean to interrupt you there, Robert.
Sorry.
But that's going to end our show today on bonnethead sharks. I hope all of you guys found this informative, and hope you guys get to enjoy actually eating them. They're actually a very tasty shark, as Alex is going to find out here for us in the near future. And this is Captain Barry from TarpinWorld.com signing off, and Alexandra B. Fishin. You can find her on Facebook. And Mr. Robert Lugowitz, he's the manager here at Fish and Franks. Come in and stop by and say hello. Until next week, we'll see you then. Tight lines. Bye.